5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Wrestle Radio Australia is a proud member of the FNX Network. You can find this show and many more at fnx.network. That's the new URL, fnx.network. G'day, it's Josh here. Calling all Aussie wrestling promotions and wrestlers. Do you need quality merchandise at a great price? If so, check out WrestleMerch Printing. Based in Adelaide, South Australia, their tees are hand-printed using the finest material. Need a logo or graphic design work done? WrestleMerch can take care of that as well. Now, the following people trust in WrestleMerch: TMDK, Damian Slater, Adam Brooks, Mr. Juicy, Elliot Sexton, and promotions such as EPW Perth, PWA, Melbourne City Wrestling, and Hunter Valley Wrestling. So for further details and a quote, hit them up on Facebook. Just search Wrestle Merch Printing and make sure you tell them Wrestle Radio Australia sent you there. And thank you to Wrestle Merch Printing for supporting this podcast and Aussie wrestling.
Oh yeah!
Make some noise!
Hello, talkers. This is Jay Hunter from OSW Review.
This is Brian Alvarez, and you are listening to Wrestle Radio Australia.
Explosive pro wrestling, Mean D. Olsen.
Hey, this is the King of the Mountain, Jeff Jarrett.
This is Robbie Eagles.
This is the loosest in Australian wrestling, Adam Brooks.
This is 5 times the world heavyweight champion, the Scrap Daddy himself, Scrap Brian Adam Pearce, and you are locked in to Wrestle Radio Australia.
Hey, it's Killian English.
Here's where the action is. Here's where the action is.
Welcome to the show. My name is Josh Armour, and thank you very much, as always, for downloading or streaming Wrestle Radio Australia, brought to you by the FNX Network. That's FNX.network, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio as well. The great places where you can find this show. Now, just a little promo here for one of my other podcasts, Social Audio Think Tank, the podcast about podcasting. We did a show that came out last week where basically I go through how an episode of WRA is recorded, post-produced, all that kind of nerdy stuff. So if you're starting your own show and you like the sound of this particular podcast, hit it up at Social Audio Think Tank on iTunes, Stitcher, and also SATT.libsyn.com is where you can find the show. So, yeah, you can get an idea of a bit of behind the scenes on Wrestle Radio Australia. And also later on in this particular show, this episode of Wrestle Radio Australia, Mike Massive, who is one half of the now former EPW Tag Team Champions. They suffered a defeat over the weekend at the State of Origin event, where the SA team of Jag, Damien Slater and Jonah Rock were decorated with toilet paper. I saw a video on Facebook, and man, I tell you what, the SA guys stirred up a bit of heat there in the lead up to the show with some vignettes and promos. Really nice sizzle for that one, and I want to check that one out on Vimeo very soon when that's available. So later on, Mike Massive, one half of McMassive, but for now, a good buddy of mine who is a co-commentator and announcer at Riot City Wrestling. He's the chief court reporter for The Advertiser, the go-to man when it comes to pro wrestling, especially for The Advertiser, Adelaide Now. He is the wordsmith, Sean Fuster. and thank you for getting through the tech hassles, as we always seem to have on this episode, on this podcast rather, this particular episode. I'm sure there'll be plenty more, but yeah, thanks for joining me, dude.
Always a pleasure, Josh. It's always worth the tech hassle to talk wrestling.
Oh, absolutely. You're not wrong there. And we're talking about a fellow who, I guess, you know, is a big part of me becoming a fan as a kid and yourself. We've talked about it before on the show. You can find our previous, our main interview edition with Sean from last year. You can find that on our YouTube channel and a few other chats that, you know, that you had with myself and Todd on this feed. But, you know, we've talked about Hulk Hogan before and how much he's been a part of our fandom. And yeah, you got the chance when he was in Melbourne to sit down with him, have a chat. And the article is online now, so we've got the link in the show notes there for you folks to have a read. But, yeah, dude, you caught up with the Hulkster. Amazing.
It was amazing. Hulk, of course, came out to Australia a few months ago to promote the upcoming WWE Australian tour. WWE got in touch with me and said, if you can make your way to Melbourne, we can give you 10 minutes with Hulk Hogan. And that's not the sort of offer you turn down in any form of journalism, let alone when you're a wrestling junkie like I am. So I got myself on a plane, got myself to Melbourne, and sat there in Federation Square, incredibly nervous, realizing that in just a few short hours, I was going to be having one-on-one time with the man who got me into wrestling, with the man who, as he probably did for many of us, served as something of a father figure in the 1980s, someone that we aspired to be, someone who also, as we all grew up, we came to know more from his backstage politicking and some of the more negative stories that are around about Hulk. And so it was a weird situation, Josh. I was sitting there having breakfast with a friend who'd taken time off work just to keep me calm before this interview. And she said to me, who do you think you're going to get, Hulk Hogan or Terry Bollea? And I said, I really don't know. And that was the fear for me going in, the anxiety. Who was I actually going to be interviewing?
And that's something that it's been well documented that, you know, fans often have that opinion of Hulk Hogan that he's had trouble separating the character from Terry. You know, Hogan and Terry are two different people, but people often see Hulk and go, 24/7, he's Hulk Hogan. And I guess when you're making public appearances and people expect the larger-than-life character, you're going to turn it on. And as a lot of wrestlers and people who are used to performing, as soon as there's a camera and that light is on, it's go time. You know, they slip into that groove of it's time to entertain. I guess you sort of had a very unique experience in that the fella that you were sitting down, you know, ended up talking to for some time was, I guess, not maybe what you had expected and not what the typical person on the street who knows about Hulk Hogan and the reputation, probably not what they would, what they would expect either.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, Hulk came out and did a press conference in front of 200 Australian fans, announced the tour, announced his presence on it, got everybody revved up. And like you say, the red light was on. He was in full showmanship mode. It was all, let me tell you something, brother, and what you're going to do and everything that you want to see. And I sat there like a kid at Christmas. I was in the front row watching Hulk Hogan and Jimmy Hart play to the crowd. It was a phenomenal experience. It was exactly what I expected. Then we went downstairs. WWE's minders led us downstairs and waited around in a green room for a bit. There was a fair few media outlets there. And I was led into a room to speak to Hulk. And that was where I got to meet the real person, as you alluded to there, Josh. This is a man in his 60s who's been on, at that point, 20 hours of flights to get from Clearwater, Florida to Melbourne. And he looks at me, he knocks back a 5-minute energy drink and says, brother, I've lost track of how many of these things I've drunk just to keep myself awake. But hearing those 200 screaming Hulkamaniacs out there just brought me back to life. So let's do this interview. Now, knowing I only had 10 minutes with Hulk, I thought I need to ask a question that's going to get me the answers I need to make it a worthwhile story. So what I said to him was, Hulk, you've redefined the wrestling business twice. first with Hulkamania, second with the New World Order, kicking off the Monday Night War. Now you've moved from being the face of professional wrestling in the ring to being the face of WWE out of the ring as an international ambassador. How did you as a person and as a performer make that transition? I thought that was a pretty simple question to answer. Instead, he went silent. He looked at me and he said, "That's a really tough question with a really difficult answer, because to be quite honest, it's been a hell of a transition, and it's all to do with the fact that for a time there, my life completely fell apart and I had to rebuild myself, because the difference between Hulk Hogan, the character, and Terry Bollea, the man, is that the character was up here and he holds his hand above his head, and the person, the real man, was down here and he puts his hand on the floor." And I was gobsmacked. Straight out of the gate, a very personal, very real admission of the difference between the flawless hero and the flawed man. And just from there, we went real deep. He talked about things that I've not seen him discuss widely in interviews before. He talked about his personal traumas. He talked about life backstage at WCW when, by his own admission, he had his head up his ass. He talked about his relationships with Ric Flair, with Vince McMahon, with Triple H. It was incredible, and it all came from this single question, Josh. Just one question. It was like he was waiting for an opportunity to open up and really talk about his life.
And perhaps because you have developed a relationship with WWE to an extent over the past few years, where they obviously trust you as somebody who, yeah, as you've mentioned before on the show, is a legit journalist who is respected within their field and also happens to know the ins and outs of the wrestling business for the last 20 or 30 years. So it kind of, you know, you're a fan. And so I think that, I don't know if somebody sort of tipped him off and said, "Hey, this is a fella that you can speak to, and he's not going to take things out of context. He's not going to tabloidify, if you like, the story." I am not the wordsmith. That is definitely
your Monica. I like tabloidify, though. Tabloidify is good.
It's a new one. That's right. That's right. If you use it enough times, you know, if people hear it enough, it's gospel. You know how things work. So, or if, you know, you just came across as, to him, as somebody that, oh, this guy seems fairly down to earth. But it's pretty remarkable that you were able to get that side of him that, you know, he may, you know, typically only let out there in, you know, a book that he's perhaps going to make profit from, or a television special, something like that. It's quite remarkable, really, what you're able to get out of him, and also the amount of time that you spent with him. It wasn't just a 5 minutes in and out type of
that's
chat.
Right. I mean, it was scheduled for 10 minutes, as I said, and the 10-minute mark came up and WWE's Australian PR team knocked on the door and said, "Oh, it's time for the interview to finish," and Hulk waved them away without a word. And I thought, oh, okay. And we kept talking for another 10 minutes. We got deeper and deeper. He talked about his wife, Jennifer. He talked about his divorce. He talked about his son, Nick. He talked about his back surgery, the moment that his back went out. He was on the phone to Vince McMahon when his back went out, precipitating those 9 horrific surgeries that we've all heard about. He talked about his faith in John Cena, or lack thereof, in the early days, and how he came around. He talked about how much he likes Kevin Owens. And another 10 minutes went by. Next thing I know, the mind is sort of gingerly coming around the door again. And let me add here, the WWE's Australian mind, Rowan, is an incredible guy. Really, really nice.
Oh, Rowan, yes. We've had Rowan on the show before.
Brilliant guy. And when Rowan poked his head around the door that second time and Hogan pointed at him with that iconic point and said, "Brother, you've got to give me more time with Sean." I felt so sorry for Rowan, but at the same time I thought, this is pretty cool. Hogan's just, you know, looked after me. That's pretty cool. So we had this very in-depth conversation, which finished with me telling him what an important factor he was in my early development, in my childhood, giving me that positive role model. And he thanked me for that and gave me a hug and said, "But the thing is, brother, you've got to remember, you were responding to Hulk Hogan, the character, not Terry Bollea, the man. And if I'm going to be the person I need to be, then I need to walk that road myself, and I need to be Hulk Hogan rather than the man I've been. And again, I was just blown away. To hear that sort of raw, candid admission of a man in his 60s who's achieved more fame than any of us will ever know, has held more money than any of us will ever know, has captivated more people than any of us will ever meet, still saying, yeah, I can be a better person, and I can be a better person by actually embracing that character. As he himself said, the Hulk Hogan character saved his life, and it's time for him to be that man in order to move on from the trauma he's had in his past. It was an incredible in-depth experience to talk to this man that we all think we know so well, and yet to see that very vulnerable side of him.
Jay Hunter from OSW Review, he and the fellas hosted a Q&A with Ric Flair, and talking to him leading up to that, he was just sort of like, oh, geez, I don't know. We're probably going to try and just keep it all inside and then go have a beer later and be like, he was kind of...
I tend to think of it as I have a segmented brain when I go into WWE gigs. I have fan brain and journalist brain. And I tend to let journalist brain chuck fan brain in a box, wrap it up in chains and sit on top of the box, lock it all in. And occasionally, if journalist brain allows it, fan brain will get a little bit of a say in. And that moment of admitting to Hulk at the end of the interview how much he'd meant to me was as close as I was going to get. But, brother, he broke those chains and he grabbed that box and he ripped it wide open, because I ended up getting a hug, I ended up getting a handshake, I ended up getting a photograph, and later, an hour and a half later, he ended up tweeting me to thank me personally for the interview, to tell me I had great energy and that I'd made him feel like he'd made a difference in somebody's life, and he couldn't thank me enough for that feeling. Unbidden, just because he felt like it, dropping me a tweet. So that, again, another mind-blowing moment, just to think, wow, Hulk Hogan's tweeting me now. It was insane, and I still can't believe it actually happened.
And probably proof right there that Hulk Hogan actually does man the @HulkHogan Twitter account, because he retweets so many fans that sometimes I think, oh, it's got to be a PA or somebody doing it. But that personal reach out to you straight after that, that's when I was like, okay, wow, well, gee, well, he really does respond to the fans and actually appreciate the fact that because those people wore the Hulkamania shirts and watched the cartoons and had the teddy bears with the yellow shirt on them, that those people got him to where he is. You know what I mean? They could have easily have said, oh, we don't like Hulk Hogan, we want Bruno back, but no, it was the time, and he now actually is responding to those fans. I think it's fantastic, And he was also doing work for Make-A-Wish, so it wasn't just which I guess is part of the WWE a promotional wagon, if you like. But he really does get a kick out of being around the kids and seeing the fact that there's probably kids there that haven't even watched wrestling, and they still probably, oh, that's Hulk Hogan, Yeah. Like, because it's such an iconic visual, his face and the whole thing, the arm,
Josh,
the Python brother.
This is a man who's been to the absolute top of the mountain as far as fame, fortune, and entertainment goes. And this is a man that has been all the way to the very bottom, lying on a couch, writhing in agony, waiting for an ambulance to arrive because his back's gone out. This is a man who was the quintessential vision of a wrestler as far as the mainstream was concerned, the number one hero who, unlike Flair, unlike Bruno, unlike Vern Gagne, unlike Dusty, didn't get his farewell moment. We all look back to Flair and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. That's the end of Flair's career as far as most of us are concerned. What an important visual, Michaels looking at Flair saying, I'm sorry, I love you, and hitting him with that super kick, That's that moment that lives forever. Now think about Hulk Hogan. He doesn't have that moment. He can't have that moment because of his back. He's immortal in all of our eyes. He's the immortal Hulk Hogan. But there's no ending to the story. And as a performer, that is incredibly frustrating. You lose that moment, the final blind arrow fired by Robert Hood that marks the site of his burial, the King Arthur going off into the Lake of Avalon, those sorts of things. Hulk Hogan doesn't get that ending. And so this is a man who realizes that his legacy is not the story. His legacy is the fans that continue to believe in him, support him, and care about him. And he says, as a man of 60, that's where my attention's going to be. These people have done me the kindness of building me a career and a life, and I'm going to give back to them as much as I possibly can. This is a man who, and I'm not saying that the stories that we've heard over the years, the horror tales, aren't true. He himself will tell you, like I said, he had his head up his ass for years. It's his own admission. But this is a man who's realized that and knows that now is the time to be the better person that he always was on screen. And I think that's a fairly courageous admission for a man of his age and in his position to be prepared to make publicly.
And probably a good thing that he stopped hanging around with SpongeBob. I mean, Bubba the Love Sponge. I always get that. I always get those two names mixed up. But from all accounts, he's actually gotten rid of some bad influences, let's say, in his life. And I think that that may also be part of this reawakening, I guess.
Absolutely, reawakening. Reawakening is a great word for it. I think a lot of it starts with Jennifer, his new wife, who is an absolutely lovely lady and very clearly has put him on the right path. And it's also, like I said, that belief, trying to believe in himself again, believing in the fans, accepting what comes his way. Hell, the fact that he and Vince McMahon can now be in a room together without killing each other is an incredible step, and that's something that a lot of us never thought we'd see, because the heat between them was just so bad. And these are all the things that Hulk discusses in the interview with me. It's, you know, not one to beat my own drum for a minute, but even as a wrestling fan, I look back at the copy that I got out of this and thought, damn, this is something different. This is a really good story.
And that's what I love about your articles, you know, when you're covering WWE, whether it's been Riot City Wrestling, you know, with the folks getting their tryouts last year and all that sort of jazz, is that, and promoting, helping to promote shows, is that as a casual reader, it's great reading. And at the same time, a wrestling fan like myself was even sitting there reading it, who knows the Hulk Hogan story, who followed his career from the time I was, you know, 7 or 8, so, you know, 1991. And I'm still reading it. Jeez, like, this is bloody fantastic, you know. I never thought I'd actually read an article or an interview or get that side of Hogan in print, on video. You know, I've seen the interviews that he's done, you know, in the past few years, but there's always that veil of hiding behind a bit of the character, and this was very, very cool. As you said, something different.
It was the shoot of all shoots when it comes to Hogan. Like, you're not going to get a rawer, more vulnerable Hulk Hogan than what you can see in this story on advertiser.com.au right now.
And one thing I've got to touch on, because I've actually seen it in comments on a couple of the articles that you have done in the past, and that's where folks have actually sort of been negative in the fact that they've said something to do with the way the article is written or this or that. And the way I see it is, hey, listen, the way that you do cover wrestling and put it over to an audience that may have not seen it in 20 years, may have never seen it, I think you sort of give it that the respect that it deserves, you know, as this art form, as this, I guess, unappreciated art form, you know, in many ways, you know, how it combines all these aspects of everything that people love in entertainment into one package. And I just sort of think that the way you approach it is pretty cool. I think anyone that's knocking it is maybe getting a bit too smarky, you know. And I know that's something coming from me, but you know, it's I just think that it's very, a very respectful way that, as a wrestling fan, the way that you approach it, you know, and get it over. I think it's pretty cool.
Thank you. That means a lot to hear. And I mean, you know, I could be smarky as I like in these articles, but the point is, I'm still writing for a mainstream publication. I've got to, like you say, appeal to those people that haven't watched wrestling in 20 years or only know it peripherally. I try to get as much insider stuff in there as I possibly can, but there's a limit when you're writing for the mainstream. What I'd say to all of your listeners is, go and read the article, give it the hits, leave comments on it, share it on social media, tweet it, Facebook it, get it out there, show the advertisers management, show News Limited's management that people in this country want to read wrestling stories, because the more that we make this article popular, the higher up we get it on the hit counter, the more opportunity there's going to be for News Limited to say, hey, we want another article about Daniel Bryan, about Kevin Owens, about Finn Balor. They will want stories about local wrestling shows. They will want stories about events that are being held in Adelaide, in Melbourne, and Sydney. The only way we're going to get more wrestling into the mainstream press is for people to support social media, retweet, Facebook, like, comment, share the articles that are out there. If we can do that for the articles that do exist, there's going to be more coming. And the more that comes, the more smarts we can bring into it, the more insider we can bring into it, because it's no longer having to be just a mainstream article. You look at what Rolling Stone does with its coverage now, where there's plenty of insider stuff. If we want that, then we need to show the support to articles like myself, like the Herald Sun's article on the weekend about Tennille Taylor, a.k.a. Emma. These sorts of things need to be shared by the wrestling community so that the mainstream takes notice, just like it did in 1984 when Hulk Hogan kicked off Hulkamania.
Absolutely. We want another boom. And we've been waiting for it and predicting it and thinking, oh, it's just around the corner on the show, and then, oh, no, it's not here yet. But
That's right. So everyone, look, whether you like Hulk Hogan, whether you hate Hulk Hogan, come and read the article. Give it a hit, because chances are that's going to give me an opportunity to interview a wrestler you like next time, or do a story about an event that you want to attend, or promote a local wrestler that you love. That opportunity is going to be there if we all as a community support these mainstream articles.
And the tour is coming up in August, and that's next month now, folks.
That's right.
So Hogan will be down here as GM. He'll be on the tour. So, again, you know, that it's the hot time to get this article out there. Any of the mainstream press that's out there about pro wrestling, let's share it around and let the outlets, as Sean said, know that there's an audience for it. I mean, and we know there's an audience for it, even if there's a closet audience for it, as you know, we know there is. Hey, we got to get it out there. So, guys, totally.
Log on to advertiser.com.au. The story's there right now. You won't be disappointed, because it's a full interactive feature with massive pictures, all courtesy of the WWE. WWE even did something unprecedented, Josh. With this article, they gave us access to their archives. We have video embedded in the story, and we have pictures embedded in the story that you've only seen on WWE.com before. We are the first media company to be permitted access to WWE's archives to craft a story. And that's a huge thing for WWE, to let that amount of control go to an outside organization. That's the power that Hogan holds. That's the value of that name brand. And that's how much they want to reach out to Australian fans. So the more we can support this article, the more that will happen.
Well, if you ask me, that's the power of the wordsmith, Sean Fuster, right there, and his awesome work. And speaking of the wordsmith, you are not just the wordsmith in print, but also at RCW. It's been a few months now that you've been ring announcing and co-commentating with myself and the Wolf Dog. I know you're listening, Wolfie. So, Sean, I'll give you your chance to get a little dig in there at some point here before we let you go. But how are you finding that? The experience of, you have done MC work in the past, but actually doing the live wrestling shows, how are you finding it? And is there, I guess, any advice that you would give? Because I know you've given me some great advice the other night, which I think I heeded to for a while there, and then
I lost
my way. But no. How are you finding that? And any tips for fellow announcers or MCs out there?
God, I'm still gathering tips from people such as yourself and Wolf Dog, who have been incredible help to me. I mean, any good that I do behind that desk at Riot City is a direct response to being able to draw off you and to draw off Wolf Dog. Wolfie and I have fallen into this wonderful Bobby Heenan / Jesse Ventura versus Gorilla Monsoon type feel. And with me doing the babyface and him doing the heel-ish but not completely heel commentary. And it's working out brilliantly. And you're there, of course, as the play-by-play man, the voice of Riot City, keeping order and keeping control. It's got a great feel. I'm really enjoying every moment of it. The guys and girls down at Riot City have made me feel so welcome, have brought me into their circle and allowed me to really kick out the jams and try this on. I'm enjoying dialing my normal personality up to 11 or 12 to create this wordsmith persona, as you so kindly named me, and to give some added garnish to the incredible stories that the wrestlers are already telling in that ring. I think it's phenomenal, and it's great to be able to be involved at that level. The only drawback to it is I'm spending hours and hours on the WWE Network now watching as many Gorilla Monsoon commentated matches as I can and trying to absorb by osmosis everything beyond, will you be serious? Because I can't just
Will you stop?
Will you stop? But it's an incredible opportunity. I'm so thankful to Chris Basso, to Joe Greco, to Matt Basso, to everybody at Riot City that's brought me on board. And I'm not going anywhere. You're going to have to dynamite me out of that center seat because as far as I'm concerned, I now understand beyond a shadow of a doubt why a job is simply what you do in order to have enough money to go to the wrestling.
Oh, mate, ain't it the truth? And just quietly, I mean, you've got fans out there.
Oh, really?
You've already got fans out there. I know it's Justine, but she has made a shirt for you, you know, so that's pretty cool. She could have been whipping up another cosplay outfit, but no, she went with the Sean Fuster fan shirt. And I just got to say that, again, to, you know, I said on Facebook and at the show, but to anyone that was at the house show, Mean Street Mayhem the other night, just thanks heaps, because it was pretty special for everyone to rally together after what we'd been through with Cookie's passing and all that sort of stuff. And it was just a really special night. It was it's one of those things that it transcended wrestling, you know, it transcended anything like that. It was all about love, and it was a really cool thing. It was great. And Todd Eastman getting decked, you couldn't ask for a better night as well.
It's like a reverse Hindenburg, because when the Hindenburg went down, you were sad. But when Eastman goes down, you're glad.
Ba-boom.
No, it was a brilliant night. And for my money, and I know this is saying a lot after some of the phenomenal shows Riot City's put on lately, you know, the 10th anniversary show and many others, for me it was the best night that I've had at a show. Maybe because you and I didn't have to commentate full things, so we were able to absorb a little more of the ebb and flow, but it was an incredible vibe and one that I'll treasure forever. So I just know that's taking a tragedy and turning it into rocket fuel to take us to that next level in honor of Cookie and being everything that he said we could be and saw that we could be.
Definitely. And July 18th, Dark Days, aptly named, I know, but yeah, we will be paying tribute even further to Cookie's memory and to what,
right,
you know, to what he meant to the company. And on top of that, rad card lined up. I believe Big Brody Marshall will be defending against Nick Armstrong, who gets his title rematch, and also Harley Wonderland goes for Savannah Summers' RCW Women's Championship. It is a hardcore match, so look out there, hardcore ladies match. And yeah, we've seen table matches and for anything goes matches in the ladies division in RCW, and they always raise hell. It is going to be
phenomenal.
It's going to be a barn burner.
and Josh, I'm a sucker for storytelling, as is very clear. For me, the dark horse of the night, the match to watch for, the match that I think is going to leave everybody in the dust, is Dean Brady versus the fastest man alive, Brad Smythe. Mm-hmm. The two of them, the feud that they have crafted is intoxicatingly violent and incredibly vengeful. Dean is so sick and tired of having smaller wrestlers in his way, in his path to what he sees as his rightful destiny, the Riot City Wrestling Championship. And Brad, of course, being the stalwart hero that he is determined to beat some respect into the no longer rookie, but certainly rising star of Riot City, and make him understand that all the strength and all the suplexes in the world can't make up for having a decent, honest perspective on life. And when these two collide again, it's going to be brutal. I think that is the match that is going to live up to the Dark Day's name more than any other.
Yeah, their match at Mean Street was just incredible the other night. And on top of that, Brad Smythe, his last two, I guess, one-on-one matches that he's been in, Dean Brady the other night and Chris Basso at Mean Street Mayhem some time ago, count-out decision, it went to the time limit. There was no actual clear-cut winner in those matches. And I know he wants to go out there and get the win, get the W in the match and not leave any doubt there as to, you know, who should have come out on top. He wants to be the winner. So there's also that extra little layer there to things as well. It's going to be interesting.
And speaking of winners, let's not forget to talk about a Phoenix Rising moment for Green Smash. There's lots of people that have written the Smash off as a gimmick, as a bit of fun, as a bit of silly. But Green Smash, little Green Smash, took big Brody Marshall to the limit at Mean Street Mayhem. His speed, his diversity of offense, his incredible athleticism, his high-flying altitude aerobics took Brody to places that he did not know how to counter. And in the end, Marshall may have come out on top, but for my money, Green Smash proved himself pound for pound one of the most dangerous wrestlers in Riot City right now. He is a young man to watch, and I think that this sky is not even the limit. The outer stratosphere isn't the limit for Green Smash with the performance he put on the other night in a championship match for the ages. So definitely one to watch.
And it's just so cool with him, you know, being a fan, going to RCW and to Wrestle Rampage shows, you know, coming down on the spaceship from Planet Smash and checking out those shows when he was younger, and now to actually be out there in the ring performing and doing what he loves. It's pretty cool as somebody who's, you know, seen somebody grow up to see them out there doing what they love and do it so well. Like it's incredible at his age how, not just how athletic he is and what he can do physically, that's of course one part of it. It's being able to work the crowd and get himself over with a complete mask. Like, it's not the kind of mask where you can see his eyes even, you know.
It's not a Rey Mysterio mask.
No, not at all. It's think Power Rangers and you're on the right track. So I know a few times, you know, the nose has sort of been bleeding because he's, you know, just had trouble with nosebleeds and then bleeding in the mask. And it's like, I don't know how he does it, you know, sometimes. I'm like, geez, how did you breathe out there? He's like, I wasn't. Okay, you're a freak.
Yep, that's Planet Smash. You know, they actually train, Planet Smash people actually train upside down, buried under 5 miles of snow while underwater, you see, so they don't have to breathe. That's one of his attributes.
And plus weighing 12 times the gravitational pull of Saturn or Earth, I mean, it's quite incredible, really, that, you know, that's, yeah, the physics of Smash, that's a whole other subject altogether. We'll be here.
It's a complete hyper-science, you know. One day I'll explain it to you, don't worry. Wolfie still can't get it, but I'll explain it to you. But then again, Wolfie has trouble counting to three, as we've discovered, or at least counting to three at a decent cadence, so.
Well, you know, that's you know, the northern suburbs, what can I say? Oh, that's cool.
You can't throw that one around too heavy.
Hey, so's the missus, so I better be very careful where I tread there, talking about the northern burbs. But
listeners, yeah, when you realise that Josh is now missing, you need to look in that direction first, and hopefully we find whatever his remains are.
I'm screwed now. Well, well, you can check out Sean's chat with the Hulkster on the advertiser's website. Give us again the details where we can find it. I'll put the link in the notes, but where people can sort of see it if they want to go straight to the source, more on your work, and also where they can find you on social media.
Absolutely. Well, the article's on advertiser.com.au right now. As we speak, it's one of the front page articles. It's a nice big photo of Hogan facing off with The Undertaker. It's also available on the advertiser's Facebook page, which is facebook.com/theadvertiser. You can find links on my Facebook page, facebook.com/SeanFewster, which is SeanFewster, or check out my Twitter at SeanFewster.
Awesome stuff. And yeah, just thanks heaps for sharing the behind the scenes, I guess, of the Hogan experience. And yeah, man, July 18th, dark days in Adelaide. If you're down for some RCW, we will both see you there, I guess. And Wolfie, he'll be there too.
That's right. We'll make sure he's there.
That's right. He's going to see Harley Wonderland go down. And on top of that, hopefully Nick Armstrong will get that gold back. Because
you
know, Marshall,
if both those things happen, if both those things happen, there's going to be no living with him that night. He's just going to sulk under a desk somewhere with his arms crossed, with that little pout on his face, probably wearing Todd Eastman's blinking sunglasses again like last time.
I think that would be hilarious. Well, Sean, thank you, dude. And yeah, July 18th, we'll see you at Dark Days.
See you then, Josh. Thanks again.
That's very cool.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Will, the host of the podcast From the Sidelines, proud members of the FNX Network. I'm here to tell you why you should listen to our show. Do you need a comprehensive look over all the sporting happenings in the world on a weekly basis? Then you need From the Sidelines. Me and the guys discuss the bizarre, the serious, and the downright weird in sport every week. Seriously, one week we talked about jousting. It was so weird. If you love sport, you'll love our show. So come and join us as we look at sport from the sidelines.
Right, we are back. Hope everybody enjoyed the chat there with Sean Fuster. And if you're not clicking over to that Hogan article yet, by all means, go over there at least sometime soon and check it out. It's a really cool read. Now, it is time to chat with a fellow who is a former EPW Tag Team Champion. Explosive Pro Wrestling fans and WA wrestling fans would know him very well. One of the biggest men in wrestling in this country, Mike Massive Mass. Thank you for joining me on the show. This is going to be good.
No worries, mate. I've got to say, I don't like that word former. It's not sitting well with me at the moment.
I can imagine. How is I guess Team McMassive holding up, and I guess feeling physically after the weekend?
Well, we're holding up very well, surprisingly, and physically we're doing very well because we had that match won. We got robbed out of it by Gen Zero, as we have done with a lot of our previous matches, either Gen Zero or The Solution or the Headhunters, always costing us the win. They just don't like us. They just don't like how popular we are, I guess you could say.
It's amazing how seeing, especially on social media, after an event, how the fans really take to you guys and want to interact with McMassive and holding the belts. There's a lot of photos of EPW fans holding those belts. It's amazing how a team such as yourself and a Shooter, Gavin Shooter McGavin, not to be confused with Josh Shooter for many of our listeners, it's amazing how you've got this beautiful contrast of the two of you, not just physically and cosmetically, but also the way that you guys wrestle. It's a beautiful thing.
That's right, it is, mate. It's like the yin and yang of Australian wrestling, you know. We're like two complete opposites, but as they say, opposites attract. And I think it's something that the fans just appeal with. I mean, like you said, not just all the physical attributes, because as a lot of people know, I'm a very large-sized guy, and they probably wonder how I... get around in that ring sometimes because they tend to be pretty gassed after about 5 minutes. That's why I let Gav do all the wrestling, you know. But I think it's just a combination of our characters and our colours, you know. People tend to familiarise themselves with the green and gold of Australia, you know, and the first thing they see when they see us is the green and gold. And the tassels that I wear, you know, I love tassels. I'm a big 80s fan. We'll dive into that a bit later. We just have something that the fans seem to familiarise with, and that's what seems to attract them to us, you know, becoming new fans. And yeah, we get requests for photos all the time, you know, even if we're down the street, you know, shopping for new wrestling boots or somebody will recognise us and say, hey, can I grab a quick photo with you guys? We're like, yeah, no worries. So, it's even surprised us at some point, you know.
It's funny you mentioned green and gold because I've been working on sort of thinking about a new logo, a new redesign, I guess, for this podcast. And green and gold was the first thing that sort of came to mind because it is definitively Australian, the green and gold colours. I mean, sure, countries like Brazil and whatnot do adopt it, but it's very Aussie. And I'm actually, talking to Tom at Wrestle Merch because he's gonna hook us up with a new redesign, a fresh look. But green and gold was the first thing that came to mind. And you're right that, especially if you are an Aussie, it's really easy to see the green and gold go, yeah, I'm on their side. They're my guys. It's a real...
That's right, exactly, Josh. No, you're right there, mate. And, a long story short, we didn't exactly pick the green and gold. It was when we were first teamed up, when we were solo characters, Shoot Fighter himself, his main colours of his costume were predominantly yellow. My colours were predominantly green. So when we merged together, we went, hey, what a beautiful combination this is. So we took the green and gold and we merged them together, and the rest is history, basically.
And as far as your beginnings in wrestling, when did you start sort of training and in-ring getting into it?
Well, I started down at All Action Wrestling about 2008, I think it was. I just started on the merch stand, just helping out. I didn't even know there was wrestling in Australia when I first moved over to Perth here and stuff. I knew there was wrestling in South Australia. I lived there for a few years and went to a couple of shows where I seen Jag wrestle and totally blew me away, and then moved here to Perth, and I had no idea there was any wrestling in Perth until I seen something advertised on Facebook. So I thought, okay, I'll grab this opportunity. So I went down and I started helping out, running the merch stand and the ticket sales and things like that. And then one of the guys approached me. He says, Mass, you keen to take up a little job as like an enforcer, a bodyguard type of role for one of our characters? I'm like, yeah, no worries, mate, absolutely. So anyway, so she came along and I did my role and stuff, and I tell you what, mate, I got the bug. And once I got the bug, that was it. I thought, this is the thing for me. So I took that one step further and started training up under the Shark down there at AA Dub. And that's pretty much how I got into the wrestling biz, mate. And I've been going for almost 7 years now. So 7 years this August.
Have you always been a really big fella? And when you started, did the physical side of things daunt you at all? Sort of when people are running the ropes, you know, and doing all this crazy stuff, and you're like, oh, gee, can I actually pull that off? But at the same time, do you want to pull that off? Because I think there's, in my opinion, not enough big guys wrestle to their size, and there is definitely an audience to cater to there. The people that love the big man clashes and people that love just seeing a guy that's 150 pounds run straight into a guy your size and just go bum first onto the canvas. It's a laugh, and it's on top of that, it kind of makes sense, you know what I mean? That somebody that size should wrestle a certain way, I think.
Yeah, you're right there, Josh. Yeah, you've got to adapt to your size, you know, and you've got to wrestle to your size. And that's one thing that I've done over the years. I've found myself a character that I'm able to perform for people, and people are easily able to adapt to. And like you said, you've got to wrestle to your size. Now, I'm not the sort of guy that's going to go up and get on the top rope and do a swanton bomb, because that's just there's no way in the world I'm going to do it. So, people said to me when I was first training, oh, can you, you know, get up on the second rope and do this and do that, and I'm like, no way. I said, not only for their safety, but for my safety, I'm not going to do it. Plus, with the direction I'm taking with my character, I'm not the sort of guy that's going to go, you know, diving off the second rope and stuff. Now, I have come across a few other big men wrestlers in Australia that have been bumping left, right and centre, and to me, I'm just like, oh, you've got a character to protect there, fellas, and you're not protecting your character too well. I mean, in the 3 to 4 years I've been at EPW, I've bumped 3 times. Now, that says a lot about character control and, you know, how you protect your character. And I think, like you were saying, there aren't enough big men wrestlers in Australia. There's big buff guys that work out the gym every day, but there's not too many guys with a beer gut like mine, mate.
And you're right there that it's not even just about telling the story of the little guy versus the big guy. It's that thing of, protect your character, protect what you've got to give to a show. And a lot of guys and girls, for that matter, even bigger guys and girls, will gleefully take an arm drag left and right. And it's like, hang on, I know you want to give and you want to help get the face over. I completely get that, but at the same time, if you're so easy to arm drag, does your weight or your stature really play into the story at all? So it's kind of like you look at it both ways. You go like, I can understand people wanting to sell and wanting to give what's best for the show, but is it really? And that's the kind of a funny thing, you know.
No, you're right there. Like, I'm not going to mention any names or anything here, but I went to see a show a couple of weeks ago, and there was a guy that was pretty much my size and girth, and, you know, he was getting clotheslines thrown at him and stuff, and he's not bumping him, and then his opponent puts a Rana on him, and he bumps the Rana, and I'm just like, why? Yeah. Why did you do that? You've protected your character so much up until this point, and now you've just bumped a Rana from a guy that's a third the size of you. Character protection is the key for me, and that's the way some of the guys have got to look at it, but they're not doing it enough, you know, and that's where people are losing the reality of wrestling, because to me it's all about trying to make people believe that it's real, you know what I mean?
Yep, I'm right there with you, and that's something that, you know, you do have folks that if somebody like yourself was to go up to the second rope once a year, you know, and it actually, you know, meant something then, you know, like people go, wow, we remember that. If you're doing it every show, people are going to just see it as, oh, he's a big guy that can flip, not, oh my God, did you see what Mass did tonight? I never thought I'd see that. Nowadays, it's, I saw that last week, so why do I care?
Yeah. I mean, you're on the subject of arm drags a moment ago. I distinctly remember a match a few years back in EPW, and I pulled out an arm drag on my opponent, and then 250-plus people were cheering, Lucha Mass, Lucha Mass. Oh, for that 1 second, I was a luchador wrestler because I arm dragged a guy. and that was absolutely amazing for me. And I'm like, God, I could put on a mask and take this up for a living now. You know, just be a lucha big guy wrestler just from one arm drag. So people, wrestling fans aren't stupid. They know what's going on in that ring, and they know what they see when they see it. Another time I did get up on the second rope, I did a double axe handle from the top, and people just absolutely lost their minds for that, just to see a big man get up on the second rope. But when I get up on the second rope, Josh, I tease the absolute hell of it. You know, I'll put my foot on the bottom rope, and I'll shake, and I'll be trembling and things like that, and really, really teasing it up. So by the time I get to that second rope and I launch myself off that second rope, the crowd goes absolutely mad, you know, they go crazy, because you're giving something them that they haven't seen before.
Yep. I'm right there with you. It's and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show as well, because you are a not just a unique character, but you can tell that you're a smart worker in that's the way that you do it. You know what I mean? And I think that there's a lot of people, and it's been a theme on the show for a while now, the whole less is more, with a lot of the interviews that we've had, but it's so true. And I keep banging on about it, but it is so true.
Yeah, it is true. I mean, I've been a firm believer of that as well, that less is more. And in the tag team that I have with the Shoot Fighter, I'm definitely the guy that does the less stuff out of there, but I'm probably the one that gets the most reaction, if you know what I mean, which I think ticks off my partner a little bit sometimes.
And he's got such a unique look as well, Gavin McGavin, with the you know, with the muffs, you know, protecting the avoiding the cauliflowers at all costs, and I really dug that promo that you guys put out. It was only, it would have been last week or the week before the State of Origin event, and that was the, I think if there was ever a perfect demonstration of the characters that you guys portray, I thought that was it. It was on point. It was very cool.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we like to come across to new fans through our promos, because we think sometimes that's the first introduction that they get to wrestling is through a promo. Now, you may have seen them or you may not have, but a couple of years ago we were doing some promos which we called McMassey Fitness. Now, the feedback we got from those was unbelievable. People absolutely loved them. Like, as you know, the Shoot Fighter, he's the fit guy, I'm the fat guy. So he's trying to get me to, you know, work out a bit and all this sort of stuff, and I just wouldn't have a bar of it, whereas I'm more the nutritional type of guy, but by eating junk food, and he won't have a bar of that. So as you can see, you know, we're the yin and the yang, we're the opposites attract sort of thing, and that's why we flow so well together in the ring, I think, as well, so...
Were you growing up as a wrestling fan, or first getting into it, were you a big tag team wrestling sort of fan?
I was. I as is, you had teams like the Killer Bees, British Bulldogs, Demolition, Legion of Doom, the Hart Foundation, absolutely huge fan of tag teams back then. And who can forget the Bushwhackers? You know, the huge, huge fan of the Bushwhackers back then, because you're familiarised with them, even though they were from New Zealand, you still treated them as Australians, you know.
Yeah, and also it was a very signature thing with the tag teams back then that the really good teams had the yin and the yang. Your Hart Foundation, you had Jim Neidhart and you had Bret Hart, two completely different wrestlers and characters, but they worked together. Powers of Pain were the same, where Barbarian was the more agile of the two, and then you had the Brute there in the Warlord. Like, some of those teams back then were just, you know, phenomenal. The Rockers, Brainbusters. That was the stuff that I grew up on, you know, and it's still timeless stuff.
Oh, absolutely it is. You know, I still sit down watching old 80s and early 90s wrestling, you know, because it's just so entertaining for me. I find nowadays when it comes to tag teams, they just take two wrestlers and they put them together, especially on the WWE, you know. There is no solid tag team division anymore, and I think that's something that mainstream wrestling's missing these days. Aside from the indie feds, who have got some good tag team divisions out there, I think mainstream wrestling like TNA and WWE are just, you know, missing the point of having good tag team divisions nowadays.
With the tag teams in the mainstream, do you think that it can be sort of brought by WWE? We're talking WWE. Do you think that they could actually bring it back? And if they did it, or do you think that it's just we're at that point with especially WWE where there is a set way of doing things, and perhaps until Vince completely moves from that, post at the top, we're not going to see as much traditional wrestling presentation, because I feel that it's a big problem with the enjoyment or the lack thereof of Raw and shows like that. Whereas NXT, you can tell that it is brought back to the roots of wrestling, of why we do things, you know?
Yeah, that's right, Josh, that's right. I mean, for me personally, like a lot of listeners out there might find this funny, but I don't watch a hell of a lot of wrestling. Because I get out there once, twice a month and I do it. I don't tend to watch a lot of it on TV. Now, that may sound weird to some people, but that's how I've been all my life with my sporting career, especially when playing things like tennis and cricket. I've done the sport, but I've never really watched a lot of it. And the same goes with wrestling, but mainly for me, because I seem to have lost that entertainment factor when it comes to wrestling. Now, to me, especially the mainstream wrestling with WWE, for me, it's very boring. For the younger generation, not so much. But the reason why I say for me it's very boring, because I'm used to that 80s style of wrestling, you know, all the gimmick wrestling and the humour and the characters and the laughter and the stories that were told were good stories. They weren't long, drawn-out stories. Like, you watch an episode of Raw now and you've got a two-hour promo and you've got an hour worth of wrestling. To me, that I've lost interest in mainstream wrestling when it comes to WWE like that, whereas I watch a lot of the indie feds because they've got the bright colours of the 80s, you know, they've got the tassels, they've got the entertainment, all that sort of thing. But with Vince, I think he's just going in this one direction of just lining his pocket with as much dollars as he can while he's still alive to do it. But with NXT, I haven't really watched a hell of a lot of NXT, to be honest with you, but I've been told that, yes, they are starting to bring up those earlier roots of what wrestling used to be.
It's a very cool show. If you get a chance to check out one of the recent episodes, it's great just to see something that's, it's different, you know, from what we're used to being given from WWE, you know. It's something that's just right. Really different.
And I think that's what wrestling's all about, Josh, is seeing something different, you know. And that's why when we take McMassive on the road through Australia, we're giving people the opportunity to see something different that they haven't seen before, you know.
What was the thing that grabbed you? Do you remember that moment or that particular, tag team or wrestler or that certain thing that went, okay, I want to see more of this?
Like, yes, I still remember the moment to this day. God knows, I'm 39 now, so this is going back quite a long time ago now. I remember my father took me to a wrestling event in Melbourne. I think it may have been the Richmond Centre. I'm not too sure, but I still remember the event to this day. And we had names on the card like Corporal Kirshner, Sergeant Slaughter, the Iron Sheik, and one man that really, really stood out for me was George Animal Steel. Now, I was a big fan of George Animal Steel in the day, and this one defining moment that hooked me into the wrestling for the rest of my life was the moment when he called out to the fans asking kids to come into the ring to buy the turnbuckles open like he used to back in the day. And I'm jumping up on the chair and I'm jumping up and down, waving my hands in the air, and sure enough, he picked me, and I was one of those lucky enough to be called into the ring to try and fight those turnbuckles open. I didn't have as sharp a teeth as what he did, but it was just that one moment where you're in the ring with, somebody you watched every week, somebody you idolised, and somebody you looked up to, and that was that one moment that I fell in love with wrestling for the rest of my life,
That's amazing, because, I think, like, when I was younger, I got to go to the Wrestle Riot shows that came to Australia in the early 90s, and, I met Jim Neidhart and got to see guys like that, Jake the Snake, but that's an amazing experience at such a young age, and also back then to even be invited anywhere near the ring back in those days, it was such a, still is to an extent, but it was such a sacred place, was that ring,
It, yeah, it was. I mean, the only other time I've ever seen a wrestler bring people into the ring was at WWE, when they first came down under at the old Colonial Stadium. And it was Rikishi, I think, called a couple of kids into the ring for his little dance spot.
Yep.
That's the only other time I've seen that. But even for those kids, that would have been, that would have been that moment in their life they will never forget, especially in front of 65,000 people, that's for sure.
Did we have the wrestling buddies and the Hasbros and all that sort of stuff? Or?
I think we had the little thumb wrestlers back in those days. I still remember the little thumb wrestlers that you used to get with your mates, and you have a little bit of thumb wrestling fun. And I do remember having a little wrestling ring myself, but really it was T-shirts for me. I remember I had a King Kong Bundy T-shirt. I had a Hulk Hogan T-shirt. I had a Hillbilly Jim T-shirt as well. Oh, God, I loved Hillbilly Jim. He was another guy I fell in love with back in the day. The toys didn't really start coming out until around about the 90s, I think. So, during the late 70s and the early 80s, all we had pretty much were thumb wrestlers or the wrestling buddies sort of things, or your soft plush toys. So.
Yep.
Oh, and the big stretchy ones. You remember the big rubber elastic stretchy Hogan things as well?
Oh, kind of like a Stretch Armstrong, like a Gumby, kind of.
That's right, yeah, like a big Mr. Elastic sort of dude. We had them as well. Yeah, Mum used to piss me off, and I used to throw it at her, I think, sometimes.
Oh, man. I'm going to run through some quick-fire favourite WrestleMania event that you remember.
WrestleMania 3, mate. Still to this day, just Macho Man and Ricky Dragon Steamboat still etched in my mind. One of the best WrestleManias I've ever seen to this day.
Visually, it was, as a kid, I loved it because it was such a different look. And a lot of the events back then, they were either, Madison Square Garden and the crowd was darkened out, or you had the bright arenas. This was, it just looked different, and that's what was so appealing to shows like that. And even WrestleMania 9, I know that a lot of people out there hate WrestleMania 9, but I love it because it's this charm of, the open air outdoor event, and you got this car park that was transformed into a Roman Colosseum and all this sort of stuff. And then and then you got the best commentary team, as far as I'm concerned, ever, of Jim Ross, Bobby the Brain Heenan, and Macho Man. But the outdoor aspect, it was the visual thing that really was, it was appealing. I always went back to it as a kid, and 3 was definitely one of those too.
Yes, that's right, yeah. And like you said, it tends to brighten it up a lot more with the outdoor aspect of WrestleMania 9 as well. Like you said, it didn't seem as dark as the other WrestleManias, being indoors as well, so.
All right, we'll go favorite match that you've had in your career. One that's a couple that stand out even.
Okay, all right then. Yeah, I can't just limit it to one. I've got a couple. Okay, my first solo debut match in EPW against Marcus Pitt. That would be a standout match for me. Tag team championship winner EPW against the Headhunters. Definitely a standout match. Another match that we had at the Game Bar a couple of months ago against the Solution, both me and the Shoot Fighter McGavin put that in our top three matches. That was just an outstanding match.
That was awesome. I love that.
Back there again.
I love that match.
And one other match that stands out for us was our first trip down to Tasmania when we wrestled for TCW. We got such a good reception when we went down there. and we had such a good match with the two guys who were taking on. So, yeah, that turned out to be a ripper as well.
Was that TCW's first show, Annihilation, or was that the second to none event?
I think that was their second show. It was earlier this year that it happened, I believe.
Yep.
I believe that was their second Annihilation show.
Very cool. Yeah, it's really cool. Like, we spoke to Lee Barber, who runs TCW. It would have been, oh, geez. I think the show actually came out New Year's Day or Christmas Day about a year and a half ago, right. Something like that. I'm going to have to put that one on YouTube because that's actually from our old feed. So I'll try and get that out soon, folks, so you can hear it. Oops, sorry. We've got another call coming through. I will decline that. They can wait. They can wait. Technology. I told you, folks, we'd have another tech problem on the show, and there we go. It was the old man interrupting. He can hold on for a sec. Where was I? Yes, TCW, Lee Barber. We spoke to him, you know, when he was starting up the promotion, and it was so cool that a place like Tasmania that didn't have independent wrestling, now, you know, folks can at least get down there, even if it's once every 6-12 months. You know, there's something down there for the locals. I think it's rad.
Absolutely, and even though they're in Launceston, you know, they're dragging fans out from Hobart, which is a good, I don't know how far Hobart is from Launceston, but from what I've heard, it's a good couple of hours drive.
Oh, yeah.
And they're dragging fans outside of Hobart up to Launceston. So, you know, they are making an impact in Tasmania, that's for sure.
And who are, some of the guys in EPW Perth? If folks aren't familiar with the promotion, if you listen to this show regularly, you probably are. But for folks that aren't, tell us a few names that people should look out for, and perhaps interstate bookers should maybe look at and go, they can contribute to what we do.
Okay, well, I'm sure people out there have heard of the names of Marcus Pitt and Chris Weiss. So they tend to visit the eastern states quite regularly, especially Marcus Pitt as part of TMDK. But as far as guys to look out for, the new up-and-comers in EPW, from what I've seen over the last couple of years, I've definitely put young Hayden Zenith up there. He's definitely making an impact in EPW at the moment. He's certainly making an impact with McMassive at the moment, costing us our last tag team match.
Bastard.
He's definitely one at the top of my list. You've got Scotty Ryan as well, who's making an impact. Hughesy, the guy from the local. These are all young, fresh-blooded kids, you know, that are coming up through the ranks now and taking over the roles of some of the EPW veterans that are slowly stepping down. But that's just a handful of names there. But we've got a few guys that have come out of the rookie stage now that are starting to go onto the main shows, and they're making a very, very good impact as well. So, and they seem to be developing quite well, and the fans are taking to their characters quite well as well. So, there's a few guys that are coming up very well in FPW.
And the State of Origin gimmick theme that you guys had as part of your show over the weekend, that's been a regular thing in EPW, and I've been a big supporter on this show of that idea that, you know, it's the us versus them, and if you can bring some reality, and it's you know, real feuds, whether it comes from footy or from the cricket or whatever it is, people love that us versus them, our state versus your state. Or, I mean, like Damien Slater, the way he was razzing up WA in the lead up to his title match and then to State of Origin, it was so well done. And you know, then obviously when Jag Slater and Jonah Rock rock up, you know, they're pelted with toilet paper. It's like, wow, you know what I mean? It's amazing.
Absolutely. It's just endless rolls of toilet paper at an EPW State of Origin event. I mean, the worst thing we hate is after the show having to pick it all up. there's one person we can blame for that, but I'm not going to mention any names. It's good to have that rivalry, of a cross-state rivalry, and it's even better for the fans. Gives them something to get behind, because we all, and I know this from experience, whether you're a face or a heel and you travel into the state, you seem to instantly become a heel because people just don't like you because you're from another state.
Yep.
So it's a bit hard for us to push the fact that we're faces when we do go into state, but, you know, people tend to come around to that pretty quickly. But as far as characters like Damien Slater or Jag or somebody or Jonah that may be a face in South Australia, as soon as they cross that border into WA, they're the biggest heels in town, and the crowd absolutely love getting stuck into them.
That shows the level of importance in managing a show well, in structuring it well, and knowing that, okay, I know that this guy may be more familiar with our crowd, but he should come out there as the heel because he can stir up a bit of heat, and then you guys come out there, boom. I mean, it's wrestling 101. I shouldn't even have to even say it, but sometimes it does happen where you're like, you introduce the person as a ring announcer or, you know, an announcer, you introduce the person from being from Victoria and they're actually a babyface, and as soon as people hear Victoria, they go boo, and it's like, oh, okay, like, maybe if they come out second, it'll be okay. You know what I mean? And I've had that a couple of times, and it's like, oh, geez, should I have even said that they're from Victoria, even though you want to bill them from being interstate? I think because it's worth – the crowd should know if somebody's travelled all the way from interstate to wrestle on this show that that's where they're from. You know what I mean? I think.
That's right, exactly. And I mean, one event that still stands out in my mind today is an event that we travelled over from Perth to do for State Pit Pro Wrestling. Now, it was a stinking hot 42-degree day, and we're at some Port Adelaide Workers Hall or something, and three of us came over with one manager, and if I remember correctly, two of us were faces and the other guy was a heel, but we're all asked to play heels because it was like a WA versus South Australia, best out of three matches sort of thing. Well, I was a big face over here in WA at the time, but as soon as I walked out that entranceway, the boos I got were unbelievable. It was like I was an instant heel. I thought, well, okay, stuff you South Australians, I'm going to play this up big time as well. So I played up the heel gimmick. And by the time the third match had come around, we all stood out ringside for each other's matches. By the time that third match had come around, we were getting spat on. We were getting yelled at. We were getting abused, even to the point of where there were going to be chairs thrown at us. And, you know, this whole time I'm sitting there laughing to myself, thinking, this is great. We're doing the job we're meant to do.
Yep.
But it was just helped a little bit more from the fact that we were from WA. That sort of like got us instant heat straight away. Regardless of how big a face you are at home, you're not going to be the same size face when you travel interstate. And that's just something that you have to deal with, and you have to play it up. And if you can play it up and get spat at like we got spat at, then, you know, you walk away happy knowing that you did your job.
Oh yeah, totally. If you are booked to go over and play a certain role, I mean that's what you got to do. That's what you go out there and do. But I mean, as far as you know, you have folks that are maybe from interstate, but they are regularly baby faces on that show. And then of course you're going to get some new fans that are liquored up, and then as soon as they hear from Melbourne, Victoria, boo. You know what I mean? So it's two different things. You know, like work doing what the booker asks you to do, and then at the same time,
The only time we really travelled interstate where we weren't a heel team was when we went down to TCW because we were booked against the heel team. So because we were the faces from WA and we were taking on the heel team from Victoria, because it was on neutral ground in Tasmania, the crowd really didn't care that we were from WA. What they cared more about was the fact that we had the big bright colours to say, hey, we're the faces in this match. The other guys are the heels. So, you know, unless you're taking on somebody from a state that's outside the state you're wrestling in, you really don't have a good chance of playing the character that you play back at home. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally. Now, with you're sort of getting up there in age, like you said, you're 39. Do you see yourself wrestling for a few years to come still, or do you sort of, are you looking at a point where you might have to hang up the boots? Are you physically, you're holding up well, you know, after wrestling for, I mean, what's it been, eight odd years now, 7 or 8 years?
Yeah, well, like I said, Josh, I just turned 39 back in June, so only another year away, and I'm 40. You know, I was just looking at my history the other day, and I got into this business at a very late age. I got into it about 7 years ago when I was 32. Now, 32 is usually the age that some guys start to think about hanging up the boots, whereas I was at the stage where I laced them on. As far as how long can my body keep going for? Well, as long as I don't take any bumps, my body can do this for another 10 years.
Yep.
You know, even though I'm hitting 40 next year, my body's feeling pretty good because I haven't thrown it around like a lot of the other guys in the wrestling business in Australia. But what they've got to understand is I've got a completely different character as well. My character, I think, is more of an entertaining wrestling character more than a wrestling character itself. So I don't throw myself around the ring a lot like the other guys do, you know, bumping through tables and steel chairs and things like that. I'll still do it in a match, but I don't do it as often. So, you know, as long as I keep getting booked in matches where I don't have to do that sort of thing or take any bumps and things like that, I can see myself doing it for a while.
And we've got EPW at the Game Sports Bar. That's coming up July 24th, I believe, is the date.
Yes, that's right. Yes, July 24th at the Game Bar on Aberdeen Street in Northbridge. That's a good little event for us because that's an 18-plus show. So we're able to take it just at one little step further and go a little bit up and beyond, especially when it comes to interacting with the fans. I mean, people will know out there how good it is to go to an 18-plus show because sometimes you get that full of emotion, you just want to drop that F-bomb. Yeah. And at an 18-plus show, you're allowed to do it.
And there's actually a free event that was, I think, from, yeah, it was from 2 or 3 months ago at the Game Sports Bar. It's on the EPW Vimeo page. So if you just type in EPW Perth Vimeo, just type that into Google, you'll get the page there. The events you can buy, you can actually download the files or just stream them. It's a little cheaper to stream them, but this one event from the Game is actually free. So if you want to get a sample of the EPW product, not just the online shows, but if you want to see what you're in for July 24th, then yeah, by all means, folks, go up there, suss that one out. It's very cool, and you got the commentary there led by Mean Dean Olsen. He's a hell of a voice, and great team you've got there as well on the mic. It definitely helps to tell the story and fill people in on what's been happening, who people are. It's a very good production.
Yes, that's right, Josh. Yes, very good. And if people out there have no idea what a teabagger or a motorboat is, hopefully they can go on there and they'll get some sort of idea of what that is through one of those highlight videos.
Yeah, I thought we'll leave that. We won't go there with the teabagging. We'll leave that to the imagination for folks who have not experienced it yet. And we'll just, you'll be surprised. You'll be enthralled. You will be teabagged to buggery.
Absolutely. I've got to say, though, Josh, it's one of the best goddamn ideas I ever come up with in my Saw wrestling career was coming up with a move called a teabag. It's unbelievable.
All right, well, I guess we'll have to go into how it came about. So for folks, if you don't want a spoiler on the tea bag, just fast forward a couple of minutes. But how did it come about? Come on.
Well, basically, I'm admitting something I shouldn't have. I used to watch a lot of Big Brother back in my earlier days, even though I used to give people crap for watching it myself.
And hey,
do you remember the teabag incident on Big Brother?
I do, and back when it began, I was a viewer of Big Brother. Now, just the advertisements for reality TV drive me nuts, let alone having to actually sit down and watch the programming. So I'm right there with you. I know what you mean, yeah.
Okay, so I've got this visualization in my mind of a teabag, and I thought, okay, how am I going to accomplish this in the ring? And then we're down at training one night, and a couple of guys are, you know, messing around, and one guy's hit a bubble bomb on another guy, and I thought, oh, hang on a minute, he's in a perfect position for a teabag in here. So then we put one and one together, and then pretty much that's how I came up with a teabag, which pretty much involves me sitting him down. I run the ropes, and I throw both my legs over their shoulders, and yeah, I'll leave the rest up to the imagination of the listeners.
I love that, how a rib can become a move. That's incredible.
Exactly. And, you know, every time I get in that ring, you know, when I say, what's the time, everybody knows what the time is because it's written on the back of me tights.
Lipton? No. Completely different kind of teabag there, folks.
So that's how the teabag came about. As for the motorboat, well, I get me man boobies out all the time, so that's just a given.
That says it all right there. I don't think we need any further clarification of motorboating. Anybody that has entered a gentleman's establishment in their lifetime, you full well know the motorboat manoeuvre. What a manoeuvre right there.
Absolutely. I've got to say, though, Josh, the wrestlers don't like it, but the fans absolutely love it. And that's all that matters.
The wrestlers love it until they're booked against Mass, and then maybe it's not so funny now. Yeah.
Yeah, they tend to regret it after it's happened, I think.
Just one second. I'm just going to quickly peruse the social medias here and just see if we do have any feedback. Just have a look, see here. Guys, I actually gave you days to leave some questions here for Mass, and there's nothing there. So, come on, guys.
Nobody loves me, Josh.
Mate, it's not me. I put it out there. I gave them time. You know, the last few shows, I've put it out there. The request for questions and feedback maybe an hour or two before recording. So I thought, all right, I'll give people time.
That's right. Maybe I need to get over interstate a little bit more so the fans can see who I actually am. Because even though I've been in the business for 7 years, you know, you still get the odd message of, hey, I'm a big fan of Australian wrestling, but I've never actually seen you wrestle over East. When you're coming over, sort of thing. So, you know, I think it's a case of even though there's wrestling fans out there, they hear our name, but they don't know exactly who we are, you know.
Well, is that something that you might actually look at later in the year or next year? Is doing some?
Oh, most definitely, yeah. Our plans for next year are to do as much interstate travelling as we can. We'd like to take the McMassive product interstate a bit more, especially after the reception we got down at TCW. Like we picked up a number of fans down there who are now fans of our tag team page and even our individual fan pages as well. And you know, we get personal messages from them on our fan pages saying, "When are you guys coming back? You know, we'd love to see you again. You know, we want to buy another T-shirt for our kids or things like that." So yeah, you know, definitely got plans in the near future to get over East a bit more often. It's just we've just got to tidy up a few loose ends over here as far as wrestling goes over WA before we can start to make the move over East.
Well, that'd be cool, and I'd love to see McMassive in South Australia. I know there's a lot of people in Adelaide, mainly because the show is based here in SA, but a lot of folks down here, I'm sure, would love to see McMassive. That'd be awesome. And you were saying earlier that you spent some time in South Australia. Whenabouts? Well, that was, I guess, you said early 2000s, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been from about 2000 to about 2006, I believe. We moved over to Adelaide from Perth. I've been married for so many years, I won't go into it too deeply, but my wife's mother fell ill with cancer, so we decided to move over to Adelaide, and when she passed away, we didn't really have anything for us, so we moved back to Perth. But the experience I had in Adelaide was pretty good, you know. I enjoyed the city, I enjoyed living there, and that's when I first discovered that there was actually independent wrestling feds in Australia, from seeing a flyer for a wrestling show that was held at a hall in North Adelaide somewhere. And I distinctly remember the match between Jag and I believe it was Hitman Julio, just yelling out his tagline, "No, you shut up."
Yeah,
so, you know, we're getting stuck into it. And he's like, "You shut up! No, you shut up!" But then I think Jag deliberately brought him down the back there and just threw him into our group of fans that were sitting there and stuff, just to pee us off a little bit, you know.
With the difference between the two cities, Adelaide and Perth, I've got to ask you real quick, because I've actually never been to Perth. Now, what's, I guess, folks from, particularly in Adelaide, might look at the city of Perth as a little decadent, I guess we could say. What are the main differences that you notice between the two cities?
I think the weather, for one. it's not, you know, during the summertime, it's not a dry, dry heat over here in Perth like Adelaide. Like, that's the one thing I still remember about Adelaide is the dry heat. I mean, it gets hot here in Perth as well, but you don't get that dry air in the, you know, you don't get that dry heat in the air. You know, we've both got beautiful hills over here that you can spend the day driving around in and stuff. I find the people in Perth a little bit easier to get along with than those in Adelaide. I'm not being biased here by any means. Probably, well, I could be. I've spent most of my life growing up in Perth and living in Perth. But, you know, there's a lot of similarities. Perth's a bigger city compared to Adelaide as well. You know, we'd probably a good stretch of 150 kilometres from the furthest northern suburb to the furthest southern suburb. So it is quite a very large city. But, you know, it's great weather over here, and any South Australian wrestling fans are ever thinking over coming over for an event, by all means do, because it's a great city to check out for the first time if you've never been here.
I know that there's going to be a lot of EPW fans that are very glad you didn't put Adelaide over too strong right there after the weekend.
Well, I try not to be too much of a-hole, if you know what I mean.
well, definitely not. And, dude, I want to thank you very much for coming on, having a chat. This has been awesome, and getting to know more about you and, you know, being able to tell a bit of your story. Before I let you go, get your plugs out of the way. I want to know where folks can get in touch with you, where folks can see you in action. Obviously, the Game Sports Bar in Perth, July 24th. Be there, folks. 18-plus event, so it could get crazy. But, yeah, tell people where they can get in touch with you, and if also merchandise, where they can sport some apparel.
Okay, other than the game show that we have on July 24th, our next big show at EPW is on August 22nd, which is EPW Hell or High Water, and that's looking to be one hell of a stacked show. As far as getting in contact with me, you can hit me up on Facebook at either my Mike Massive fan page or Mick Massive. You must be sure to put a space in between Mac and the Massive, because the silly Facebook police won't allow us to put it all as one name. So it's Mac Massive, capital M, little C, space, and then Massive. So you can find us there. As far as merchandise goes, you can just hit us up over either one of the Facebook pages. We've got McMassive shirts, we've got McMassive photos, and hopefully once we get those tag team belts, we'll have some new photos of us with the tag belts, and we'll get some new shirts coming out hopefully later in the year as well.
Awesome stuff. And when you said game show there, I couldn't help but thinking Family Feud, EPW Perth. You're going on Family Feud with three other people from EPW. Who are you picking for their, I guess, you know, their quick wit or their brain? Well, who are you going to pick there?
I would pick Eddie Bombay. Sam Fantastic, because he's a plus-size party animal, and any guy that's plus-size is all right with me.
Hey.
And I'd have to go into it with my tag team partner, Gavin the Shoot Spider McGavin, because without him, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Aw, look at the bro love. I love it.
definitely, mate. You got to keep the love between partners.
Awesome, dude. Well, that will pretty much, I guess, wrap us up. So, Mass, I want to thank you very, very much for coming on Wrestle Radio Australia. All the best with the Game Sports Bar event, and for the rest of 2015, hope McMassive can get that gold back. That'd be cool.
Yes, that would be cool, Josh. Thank you very much for having me, and hopefully when we get that gold back in a couple of months' time, I can get my tag partner on the show with us together.
That'd be great. All right. Thank you very much, Mike Massive. It's been good.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks.
FNX. Hey, everyone. I'm Todd Eastman. And every fortnight, the Big Ballers and I bring you the Big Ballers podcast, where we talk NBA news, trades, and anything else related to basketball. We're insightful.
Lance Stephenson, he's going to be, I reckon, an all-star this season.
Serious.
I've got a certain spot to fill, but Miller usually fills it with the D.
Sounds pretty fluent to me.
Nah, that's been edited.
Professional.
Harrison Barnes. Dude, follow me again. There's no need to unfollow me. I'm sorry for whatever I did.
And most of all, welcoming to new fans.
Anyone that is not a basketball fan, that is all of a sudden a basketball fan looking for a team, this is what I say to you. We don't want you.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, FNX.network, or anywhere you can listen to podcasts. That's the Big Ballers podcast. Like sitting next to a bunch of guys in the pub who think they know about ball.
All right, we're just about at the end of this episode of WRA. Thank you very much for listening in, and a big thanks to our guests Sean Feaster and Mike Massive. I had a great time. Just want to let you guys know that a while ago I did say that we were looking to get Jimmy Havoc from Progress Wrestling in the UK onto our show. Now, we're still trying to get things happening, so if you want to get your dose of Progress podcasting, check out Shoot the Defense on FNX.network with our mate Stell. He's a massive Progress Wrestling fan. He's a front row at all the shows over there in the UK, and he had Jim Smallman on, who is the co-owner of Progress. So check out Shoot the Defense for not only your football and soccer coverage, but also that interview with Jim Smallman. I will be checking that one out tonight as soon as I've wrapped this up. So get onto that. Shoot the Defense on FNX.network and iTunes. If you love the show, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, or follow us on TuneIn Radio, and you can also find all of our episodes on FNX.network. Follow us on Twitter at WrestleRadioAU. You can find me at Josh JD Armour, and you can also find us on Facebook. Just search Wrestle Radio Australia and you will find the group and the page. Also, to whoever left us a little iTunes review there saying that we are apparently very professional. Not my quote. That was whoever left that review. Thank you very much for that. And a 5-star, always appreciated. If you feel the same way and you enjoy the show, give us a rating and a review while you're subscribing. That does help us get into plenty more ears. And if you want to know more about EPW Perth, check out some of our recent episodes with Mean Dean Olsen. And also Jared Slate was on a few months ago. That was a cool chat as well. Until next week with Benny Factor of the Tag Team Panic. We've had Sid Parker on before. Now it's time to have a chat with Benny. That'll be fun, but until then, my name's Josh Armour, and this has been Australia's Wrestling Podcast, Wrestle Radio Australia.